Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'm reading the San Angelo Standard Times for the week of Sunday, January 30th, 2022. I'll begin with the most recent articles. COVID-19 update, a look at San Angelo coronavirus data for February 2022. Tom Green County, City of San Angelo, as of February 1st, 39,967 positive cases reported, 151 new positive tests, deaths 506, 322 from Tom Green County, 184 from other counties. 82 currently hospitalized, 4,019 active cases. Angelo State football team adds 35 players on signing day by Charles Bryce, published February 3rd. On the heels of the most successful season in 32 years, the Angelo State University football team added 35 new faces to the program on National Signing Day on Wednesday, including San Angelo Central High School safety, Ty Casey. "When I get up here to do this, I'm so excited," ASU head coach Jeff Gersh said during an online ceremony. "I'm excited for a lot of reasons. A lot of it has to do with the people in this room. But the other part of it, of the excitement, comes from people joining this family and joining Angelo State. We preach Ram Fam here. It's something that's been said since the day I walked through the doors here at Angelo State, joining the Ram Fam. And today is a big day for 35 individuals who are coming and joining Angelo State football. It's big for us as coaches, too, because we get those new personalities and individuals into our program, and we get to start coaching and developing them over the years. So it's a great day, and we're so excited about that. We really are." ASU finished 11-3 overall and 5-2 in the Lone Star Conference. The Rams reached the NCAA Division II quarterfinals for the first time since 1989. Gersh and his staff combed the Lone Star State for talent, and they're happy with what they landed. "We've done a great job in recruiting the whole state of Texas, which means a very diverse group of individuals, from East Texas down to Corpus Christi and Houston, and Dallas and West Texas," the Rams coach said. "That's hard to do. When you're only looking at 30 to 35 kids a year, and you're recruiting the whole state of Texas, you better be a pretty good football player to get picked up." Casey is a 6-foot, 195-pound safety who has a lot of experience at linebacker. He was second team selection on the All-District 2-6A team this past season and an All-West Texas pick. He had 120 total tackles, 5 tackles for loss, 1 sack, 2 quarterback hurries, 1 fumble recovery, and 1 pass breakup his senior season. "We'll figure out where Ty's going to play," Gersh said. "He's a 3-time All-District player. 2 of those times were first team, and he was an honorable mention All-State linebacker." They lined Ty up all over the field, playing the high safety there against Odessa Permian, pointing to the video board, when they were running some triple option stuff. "He just runs the alley so well and is very physical, and we just love the way he lines up and gets after it on Fridays. So hopefully he'll do the same thing here on Saturdays. We're excited about Ty." The Rams signed 2 other players from 2-6A. Friendship quarterback Chad Ferries, 6'2", 185, and Midland Legacy wide receiver Danny Bishop, 5'9", 168. West Texas UIL District Realignment for 2022-24, published February 3rd. Here are the 2022-24 district football alignments. along with the 2022-23 district basketball and volleyball alignments for San Angelo area high schools, released by University Interscholastic League on Thursday, February 3rd. Class 6A, District 2. Midland, Midland Legacy, Odessa, Odessa Permian, San Angelo Central, Woolworth Friendship. Class 4A, Division 1. District 2, Andrews, Big Spring, Brownwood, Lubbock Estacado, San Angelo Lakeview. Class 3A, Division 2, District 2, Ballinger, Brady, Early, San Angelo Grape Creek, San Angelo Texas Leadership, Wall. Class 2A, Division 1, District 3, Anthony, Big Lake, Reagan County, Cristoval, Forsan, Ozona, Sonora. District 4, Anson, Cisco, Colorado City, Holly, Olney, Stamford, Winters. District 5, Bangs, Coleman, De Leon, Goldthwaite, Hamilton, San Saba, Tolar. District 14, Harper, Johnson City, LBJ, Junction, Mason, Stockdale. 2A Division 2. District 5, El Dorado, Irian, McCamey, Midland, Texas Leadership, Sterling City, Water Valley, Wink. District 6, Abilene, Texas Leadership, Albany, Cross Plains, Hamlin, Miles, Roscoe Collegiate. District 15, Brackettville, Brackett, Center Point, Charlotte, DeHannes, LaPrière, Rock Springs, Sabinal. Class 1A, Division 1. District 7, Ackerley Sands, Gale Borden County, Garden City, Lenora Grady, Rankin. District 13, Eden, Menard, Mertzon, Irion County, Robert Lee, Very Best. District 14, Avant, Jonesboro, Lomita, May, Santa Ana. Class 1A, Division 2, District 13, Blackwell, Bront, Lorraine, Trent. District 14, Moran, Paint Rock, Rising Star, Valera, Panther Creek. District 16, Brooksmith, Cherokee, Lawn, Richland Springs, Rochelle. San Angelo Central and Lakeview coaches get their wishes with realignments, by Charles Bryce, published February 3rd. San Angelo Central High School head football coach Kevin Crane and Lakeview head coach Hector Guevara breathed sighs of relief Thursday morning when the 2022-24 UIL realignment was announced, with not that many changes for the Bobcats and Chiefs. Central is staying in District 26A with longtime rivals Friendship, Midland Legacy, Midland High, and Odessa Permian. The only change was that Abilene High dropped out of the mix after moving down to the 5A ranks. You never know for sure, but that's kind of what we were expecting and hoping for, and it ended up working out that way, so we're glad to see it, Crane said. The Little Southwest Conference, as Central's district has been called for decades, won't be broken up. We're just used to playing the teams out west, and we're used to the travel, the Bobcats coach said. Everybody's kind of used to it, so it just seems to work better that way when we're all out here together as a district. Coaches around the state get anxious every 2 years, not knowing for sure how things will work out and what directions their teams will be heading. They say it's kind of like Christmas morning, and then you wake up and there's snow on the ground, and it was kind of like Christmas morning, Crane said. When 9 o'clock rolled around, they passed out the packets and we were able to see it. You're excited and nervous and all those things wrapped into one. And once you actually get to see the packet, you're kind of relieved because you have some stuff set up for non-district. And if your district is a lot different than you think, you have to retool a whole lot of things. So luckily, we didn't have to do a whole bunch of retooling this morning. That was a good thing. Now that the Bobcats are in a five-team district with Abilene dropping out, Central will have an extra non-district game on the schedule. At this point, we feel pretty good about it, Crane said. We've got five teams scheduled, and hopefully it stays like that. After scrimmaging Lubbock Coronado, Central will open the 2022 season against Colleen Shoemaker, followed by showdowns with El Paso Montwood, Abilene Cooper, Belton, and Abilene Wiley. It remains to be seen which games will be at home, except for the Montwood game. That will definitely be in San Angelo. The 2-6A schedule will be worked out soon. On the north side of San Angelo, Lakeview will remain in District 2-4A Division 1. Andrews and Big Spring are still in the district, but Fort Stockton was realigned into 1-4A Division 2. The new additions to 2-4A are Brownwood and Lubbock Estacado. It worked out good, I guess, Guevara said. We kind of stayed pretty close to what we expected. The Chiefs coach acknowledged that the additions of Brownwood and Estacado will make it more competitive. In recent years, Lakeview has played in a four-team district that guaranteed the Chiefs would make the playoffs even if they didn't win a single game in district play. Now things will be different in a five-team district, with one team sitting at home at the end of the regular season. The Chiefs are embracing the challenge. Being in a competitive district, it'll hopefully raise our game up and continue what we're working on, the Lakeview coach said. Punching a ticket to the postseason will have more meaning for Lakeview now. It's what we want, the Chiefs coach said. We want to be in a competitive district, and we're excited. Guevara wasn't too nervous about things leading up to Thursday's announcement. It's a good feeling to see that we're going to stay with some familiar foes, and adding those two teams makes it more competitive, Guevara said. We've just got to continue the process and keep working hard and focus one game at a time come fall. Travel-wise, it's going to be a little better for Lakeview. The Chiefs' longest road trip in the district the next two seasons will be a 190-mile trip to Estacado. If we would have gone east, it would have been a different story, Guevara said. But yes, as far as travel, it's sure going to help a lot because it does wear and tear on you when you're on the road quite a bit. Lakeview is scheduled to open the 2022 season against La Mesa, followed by matchups with Sweetwater, Vernon, Lubbock High, Leveland, and Greenwood. The sites of those games will be announced later. As for the district schedule, Guevara said they were going to meet later Thursday afternoon or Friday morning via Zoom to hammer out the 2-4A schedules. Road conditions are not good enough for the coaches to all meet in person as they typically do. The Region 15 Center in San Angelo is where coaches and athletic directors from around this area converge every 2 years for the UIL announcements. Things were a lot different this time due to the weather. The only coaches who were able to make it were from San Angelo and neighboring communities like Wall and Cristoval. It was a lot easier to get a packet this time around, Guevara said with a laugh. Schools in the area canceled classes for Thursday and Friday. Man arrested after making threats to kill San Angelo woman. By Elena Edgen, published February 1st. A man from Orange, Texas, has been arrested after a San Angelo woman received multiple death threats, according to an arrest affidavit. In July 2021, a San Angelo woman filed a complaint about a family member assaulting her by choking. On January 27, 2022, the woman contacted law enforcement again due to the man calling and threatening her, records state. The calls span from 2 p.m. January 27th through 3:41 p.m. January 28th through three different cell phone numbers. According to the affidavits, The first call was at 2:51 p.m. Thursday when a man told her, "I'm glad you're back in town. I'm going to find you expletive." At 6:08 p.m., the same man said, "You're such a dumb expletive. Where are you?" At 6:24 p.m., the same number calls and states, "I'm going to shoot you in the head. Where are you at?" At this point, San Angelo police were monitoring the calls. At 6:44 p.m., a new number calls and the same man asks where she is. At 3:41 p.m., January 28th, another number calls while the woman met with the deputy. She put the call on speaker, and the man said, "I'm going to kill you." Law enforcement arrested Chad Dylan Hofsbauer, 35, Saturday on suspicion of stalking, threatening bodily injury or death. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $150,000 bond as of 11 a.m. Monday, according to online jail records. People dealing with domestic violence can get help in Tom Green County. Here are some local resources. Crisis Intervention Unit, part of the Tom Green County Sheriff's Office, helps victims of violent crimes or other crisis. They can help people navigate protective orders, compensation applications, create an escape plan, assist with law enforcement, and offer limited funds for assistance. Call 325-703-2014 or 325-655-8111. The Family Shelter, which offers shelter and assistance to victims of domestic violence, including families with children. Call 325-655-5774. Open Arms Rape Crisis Center and LGBTQ Plus Services offers assistance to victims of domestic and family violence, along with support. Call 325-658-8888. For legal help involving family violence, call 800-374-4673. There is also the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-7233, which can help with safety planning, legal help, and referrals to other services. Sean Adkins, not in person, enters plea of not guilty in Haley Dunn murder case. By Laura Gutsky, Abilene Reporter News, published January 31st, Colorado City. Through his attorney, Sean Adkins has entered a plea of not guilty on two charges related to the death of 13-year-old Haley Dunn, according to the Mitchell County District Clerk's office. The plea was included in a document filed by the attorney to waive Adkins' arraignment hearing scheduled this week. A Mitchell County grand jury, December 30th, indicted Adkins on the charges of murder and tampering with physical evidence with intent to impair a human corpse. Texas Rangers arrested Adkins on the charges June 14th in Big Spring. In earlier court documents from the 32nd District Court in Sweetwater and filed in Mitchell County, Adkins is accused of fatally striking Dunn in the head with an unknown blunt object. He then allegedly concealed Dunn's body to hamper the homicide investigation. The Colorado ISD 8th grader was reported missing by her mother, Billie Jean Dunn, on December 27, 2010. The teen allegedly had left the day before to go to a friend's house but never arrived. Dunn's remains were found in March 2013, about 30 miles northwest of Colorado City, near Lake J.B. Thomas in Scurry County. At the time of the teen's disappearance, Adkins was the live-in boyfriend of Dunn's mother. Dunn's disappearance became a missing persons case in January 2011, according to Reporter News Archives. Early in the investigation, law enforcement officials named Adkins the primary person of interest, according to Reporter News Archives.
new judge to oversee child prosecution cases in Tom Green and Brown County area, by Elena Edgen, published February 1st. A new judge will be overseeing child protection cases in Tom Green County and the surrounding areas, including Brown County, according to a news release. The presiding judge of the 7th Administrative Judicial Region of Texas, Honorable Dean Rucker, named a new associate judge for child protection cases on Monday, January 31st. Elizabeth Watkins will replace the current associate judge, Gary Banks, who retires at the end of February, the release stated. Watkins will start her duties on March 1, 2022, for a four-year term, which will include presiding over child protection cases filed by the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services in Tom Green County and surrounding counties and in Brown County. Watkins received her bachelor's degree from the University of Texas at Austin and her law degree from South Texas College of Law. After school, her career included investigative specialist with the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services, assistant district attorney for the Anderson County District Attorney, regional attorney for DFPS Region 4, family justice director for the Williamson County Attorney's Office. As the director, she founded Family Recovery Court, a unique trauma-informed approach to child protection services, according to the release. Since 2011, Watkins has also served as a trainer for the Trial Skills Training Program for the Texas Supreme Court's Permanent Judicial Commission on Children, Youth, and Families. She is also board certified in child welfare by the Texas Board of Legal Specialization and a member of the Texas Bar College, according to the release. San Angelo police officer run over by car twice. Man charged with aggravated assault, by Elena Edgen, published January 31st. A San Angelo police officer was injured Sunday after being run over twice, according to an arrest affidavit released Monday. About 11:46 p.m. Sunday, January 30th, police responded to a domestic disturbance involving a woman and a man in the 800 block of Paint Rock Road. Officers learned a man wearing red shorts and a tie-dye shirt was attempting to flee the area, according to court documents. Upon arrival, an officer saw the man shove the woman, then get into a Kia Forte. The driver's side door remained open as the officer struggled with the man in an attempt to detain him, records state. The man started the engine and reversed the Kia at a high rate of speed, causing the officer to become entangled under the door. A tire run over the officer's legs, according to the affidavit. The man put the Kia in drive and ran over the officer's lower body again, stopped the vehicle, and tried to flee on foot. A second officer deployed a taser device on the man, which resulted in him being taken into custody, according to a news release issued Monday by the police department. The officer had injuries to most of his right side, including his head and body, according to the affidavit. They were transported to Shannon Medical Center and later released. Devin Shea Gomez, 22, was arrested about 1:33 a.m. Monday on suspicion of aggravated assault against a public servant and assault by contact family violence. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $100,000 $512 bond as of 11:15 a.m. Monday, according to online jail records. Since October 2021, at least four San Angelo Police Department officers have been injured in the line of duty. Three men charged after armed robbery at San Angelo Hotel, narcotics found, by Elena Edgen, published January 31st. Days following an armed robbery at a San Angelo hotel, authorities have arrested three people, one of whom was a wanted fugitive, according to court documents released Monday. On Wednesday, January 26, police learned of an armed robbery at a San Angelo hotel in the 400 block of Avenue L. A person entered a hotel room and found three men, one with a gun, records state. The man with the gun pointed it at the person and demanded the keys to the person's vehicle. The trio took the keys, the person's cell phone, and a drink, then took the vehicle, according to court documents. On Thursday, police located two men who matched surveillance video photos of the suspected robbers. One of the men, from Anthony, Texas, was in possession of both the gun and methamphetamine, record state. During interviews with investigators, both men allegedly admitted they had been at the San Angelo Hotel during the time of the robbery, according to arrest affidavits. Authorities soon identified the third man and arrested him on Sunday. Andrew Travis Barnett, 28, was arrested Saturday on suspicion of aggravated robbery, failure to identify as a fugitive, and possession of drug paraphernalia. He remained in the Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $51,162 bond as of 9 a.m. Monday, according to online jail records. Jimmy Ray Eden Jr., 30, was arrested Thursday on suspicion of aggravated robbery and three warrants in Tom Green County. He was also charged with burglary of a habitation and criminal mischief between $2,500 and $30,000 in Eastland County. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $70,502 bond as of 9 a.m. Monday, according to online jail records. Raymond Blake Keel, 20, from Anthony, Texas, was arrested Thursday on suspicion of aggravated robbery, possession of methamphetamine, possession of a controlled substance, evading arrest detention, and two warrants. Keel was also charged with minor in possession, no driver's license, and speeding 10% or more over the posted speed limit in Schleicher County. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $73,933 bond as of 9 a.m. Monday, according to online jail records. Petition to outlaw abortion in San Angelo certified. City mulls next steps before public vote. By John Tufts, published February 2nd. City Council members accepted a certified petition Tuesday signed by more than 1,000 residents who want to outlaw abortion in San Angelo, effectively declaring the city to be a sanctuary for the unborn. While anti-abortion supporters have urged officials for a public vote no later than May, it could take up until November before the proposed ordinance appears on the ballot. Last week, Julia Antilli with the city clerk's office determined a sufficient number, at least 1,512 people, had signed their names to a petition wanting an ordinance banning abortion in San Angelo. On Tuesday, February 1st, she brought the petition to city council members and addressed what steps were required in proposing a new ordinance for adoption. "We're ready to move on with the following steps that have to be done per city charter to get this on to a ballot," Antilli said. Prior to a vote, Antilli told council members they would need to publish the 17-page draft ordinance in the Standard Times, both in English and in Spanish. She recommended giving residents at least 1 week to read and consider the draft ordinance before scheduling a public hearing. At that public hearing, council members can decide to accept the ordinance as proposed, make changes to the ordinance, or reject the ordinance, Antilli said. Should the city reject the proposed ordinance, members of the initiating committee who submitted it will have 20 days to issue a certified statement requesting the ordinance be placed on the ballot, either in its original or amended form. Antilli suggested City Council hold a public hearing for the ordinance during its regularly scheduled meeting on March 1st. A motion for doing so was made by Councilperson Larry Miller, single-member District 6, and then seconded by Harry Thomas, single-member District 3. San Angelo Mayor Brenda Gunter asked if anyone among the roughly two dozen people attending Tuesday's meeting had public comments to offer before council members voted. Several members of the audience stepped forward. For Ryan Buck, a March public hearing wasn't soon enough. Speaking on behalf of other anti-abortion supporters gathered in the audience, the senior pastor of Emmanuel Baptist Church, 90 East 14th Street, asked council members to shorten the timeline proposed by Antilli by as much as 2 weeks. Our hope is that we would not go forward with the March deadline for the public hearing and that we could move that up so we can make the May ballot, Buck said, who worried the ordinance wouldn't appear before voters until November. We'll go as far as we have to, Buck said, adding that anti-abortion activists would be loud and clear in their support for the draft ordinance, whether it took 4 months or longer to enact. Following Buck to the podium was Mark Lee Dixon, director of Right to Life of East Texas, who not only requested a public hearing be scheduled on February 15th, but implied the city was running afoul of state law. According to the laws of the state of Texas, before you vote on something that's on an agenda, you have to hear public comments, said Dixon, who told officials its decision to consider a March 1st date was invalid. Dixon, who founded the Sanctuary City for the Unborn initiative, was named in a recent lawsuit against Texas's controversial Heartbeat Act, which bans abortions after 6 weeks and deputizes private citizens to sue those who aid or provide such abortions. In December, the U.S. Supreme Court permitted the law to remain in place for now while it moves through other courts. The justices agreed, however, to dismiss challenges against Dixon himself, the sole individual named in one of the suits, according to the Texas Tribune. He, like Buck, urged council members to get the issue before San Angelo voters sooner rather than later. If this is put on the November ballot, you're looking at a lot more time of this being at the forefront, Dixon said. After Dixon stepped away from the podium, Gunter asked City Attorney Teresa James to weigh in on implications officials were illegally discussing the item. James pointed out that no such vote had taken place. A motion on the item had been made, and that public comments, including ones offered by Dixon, were part of that discussion before council's members voted. At least five other members of the audience spoke to city officials, echoing Buck's and Dixon's request to put the ordinance on the May ballot. While there are currently no abortion clinics in San Angelo, as of Tuesday, February 1st, one speaker told officials lives will be lost due to abortions if the city failed to act quickly. This is not a matter that can be shelved for the matter of convenience to be put not on the May ballot, but the November ballot, said John Berriot. I will encourage you to act with the haste warranted in this situation. After about 15 minutes of discussion, council members voted 4-1 in favor of holding a public hearing on March 1st, setting up the ordinance to appear on the November ballot. Lucy Gonzalez, single member District 4, voted against the motion. Tom Thompson, single-member District 2, was not present. Buck expressed disappointment in the decision, but vowed to fight on. We feel there was ample time to get the measure prepared for the May ballot, Buck said during an interview with the Standard Times. We're going to move forward. It'll stay as a hot-button issue through the November midterm election. More than 2,000 citizens are disappointed today, but we'll go forward. A copy of the ordinance proposing to outlaw abortion in San Angelo will appear in a later print edition of the Standard Times. San Angelo To Go now offering college lunchbox with snacks that won't break the bank. By Rosanna Frere, published February 1st. San Angelo To Go is now offering a college lunchbox with snacks that won't break the bank. We remember what it was like to be a hungry college student on a limited income, which is why we put together our SATG College Lunchbox, a Facebook post stated. The item launched on February 1st and includes a 16.9-ounce Coca-Cola, a package of chicken flavor top ramen, a 2-pack of chocolate chip cookies, a Slim Jim, and a bag of Takis, for $1.99. Carson Beavers, owner of San Angelo To Go, said the pack is available to everyone. We wanted to offer something available and affordable to anybody who is on a limited income, he said. We just remember when we were in college and our thing was ramen and keeping it as cheap as we can. People can also use the coupon code DELIVERED for free delivery all week long. We don't even make money off of this, Beaver said. We want to fill you up for as cheap as we can possibly get it. There is a limit of one per order, and the packs are available Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Beaver said they are hoping to expand the hours of availability and are open to feedback on what can go in the lunchbox. We would love to hear from people about this, he said. We want everyone to enjoy it. Karen Hesse Smith, presumed winner in San Angelo City Council race, pending mail-in ballots, by John Tufts, published January 29th. Karen Hesse Smith is the presumed winner of Saturday's special election race and is poised to become the newest member of the San Angelo City Council, pending the outcome of mail-in ballots, which could potentially trigger a runoff. On Saturday, January 29th, residents living in Santa Rita and College Hills voted during a special election to determine who would represent single-member District 5. The winner will serve an unexpired term until May 2023. Four candidates, two women and two men, filed to run for office after Lane Carter resigned his council seat in a bid to become Tom Green County Judge. He faces several challengers during the March Republican primary. At about 8:30 p.m. Saturday, January 29th, Smith had claimed the most votes with 428 early, absentee, and election day ballots, 51.14%. Her nearest challenger, John Austin Stokes, had a total of 316 votes, 37.75%. Lynette Lucas earned 54 votes, 6.45%. Brian Neil Engel had a total of 39 votes, 4.66%. The results are not considered final until canvassed. While Smith earned the lion's share of votes Saturday, elections administrator Vona Hudson cautioned there were still mail-in ballots that had yet to be received, which could lead to a runoff election if enough of those votes swing to Stokes, Lucas, or Engel. To be declared the winner, Smith will need to maintain a margin of at least 50.1% of the total ballots cast. Hudson said there were at least 22 mail-in ballots, including federal postcard application voters, that could potentially dip Smith below the threshold. Should a runoff election occur, Smith would face Stokes, who earned the next highest amount of votes on Saturday. Hudson said those mail-in ballots would need to be postmarked by January 29th in order to be counted. Votes from military personnel sent by postcard application would have until 6 days after the election. It's not all done until we see if there are any more votes to be processed. And then, of course, they have to be canvassed. Then it's official. Right now, it looks like Smith has a good lead, she said. Smith did take a commanding lead with early voters, claiming 285 early and absentee votes out of the total ballots cast. On Saturday night, she spent much of the evening at the Tom Green County Elections Office as the results came in. This feels fantastic, Smith said during an interview with the Standard Times. I definitely want to thank the voters because their vote is their voice. That's the whole point of being put in a position like this, to hear the voices and be the very best representative that you can be. Smith also acknowledged her opponents during what she called an exhausting and time-compressed election. She was the last candidate to file on December 13th and said it took lots of work from the beginning of the race until the end. It was intense, but honestly, I had such an incredible time talking to people. I heard the most amazing and inspiring stories, Smith said. Going door to door, taking phone calls, hearing from people via email or while walking, it was a very motivating and uplifting experience. Congratulations to the other three candidates who all ran a good, clean, honest race, she said. There was good manners and cordial behavior to everyone. It was a pleasure. Early voting for the special election took place January 12th through the 25th, in which the Tom Green County Elections Office reported 462 people out of 9,298 registered voters, 4.9%, in single-member District 5, arrived at the polls to cast ballots. Officials received an additional 46 absentee ballots. Hudson appeared pleased by early voter participation. "That's a little bit higher than I expected," Hudson said during an earlier interview with the Standard Times. "I didn't think we'd do much more than 4%, so I'm glad we had people turning out." Homicide detectives asking San Angelo for help in shooting death of Army Sergeant, by John Tufts, published January 28th. The San Antonio Police Department is asking for the San Angelo public's assistance in the January 1st, 2021 murder investigation of Army Staff Sergeant Jessica Ann Mitchell, according to a news release. Homicide detectives believe that an individual or individuals in the San Angelo area may have information in Mitchell's murder investigation. On Friday, January 1st, 2021, Mitchell was celebrating New Year's Eve with friends at the Fourth Quarter Sports Bar, 8779 Wurzbach in San Antonio. Sometime after 2 a.m., Mitchell left the bar in her 2019 white Dodge Charger alone, a news release stated. Mitchell was traveling eastbound on Interstate 10 and had just passed the Vance Jackson exit when detectives believe someone in a red vehicle opened fire and struck the driver's side of her vehicle, a news release stated. Mitchell may have swerved into the red vehicle, causing minor damage. She was shot several times, according to the news release. Mitchell was transported to the hospital, where she passed away at approximately 3:21 a.m. Homicide detectives are asking for the public's assistance in the San Angelo area. Crime Stoppers and the U.S. Army CID is offering a combined $30,000 reward leading to the arrest and conviction of the person or persons responsible for Mitchell's murder. You can remain anonymous. If anyone has any information on this vehicle or this case, they are urged to call Crime Stoppers at 210-224-STOP, S-T-O-P. Reference case SAPD 21-000072. Big Spring police say man had almost 70 pounds of marijuana and other drugs in-house, from staff reports published January 28th. Narcotics officers who were arresting a Big Spring man on warrants discovered almost 70 pounds of marijuana at his residence, as well as other illegal drugs and a large sum of cash, according to a Big Spring police news release. When police approached Patrick Aaron Ramirez outside his residence in the 1600 block of Stadium at about 4:15 p.m. Thursday, the suspect threw a marijuana cigarette near the front door of the residence, the release said. While seizing the cigarette, investigators could smell a strong odor of cultivated marijuana from within the residence, the release said. After obtaining a search warrant, officers entered the residence. They found about 69 pounds of marijuana, 7.07 grams of psilocybin mushrooms, 1 gram of THC, $107,000 cash, and 2 firearms, including one reported stolen out of Howard County, the release said. In addition to the previous charges related to the warrants, Ramirez faces new charges: theft of firearm, possession of a firearm by a felon, money laundering, 2 counts of manual delivery of a controlled substance, possession of marijuana, and possession of a controlled substance, according to Howard County jail records. Ramirez remains in jail, and the investigation continues. Don't be fooled by police impersonators. Here's what to do if stopped by an unmarked car. By Elena Edgen, published January 27th. Police are urging San Angelo drivers to be cautious after learning a man driving a black Dodge Charger may have attempted to impersonate law enforcement. About 5:45 a.m. Thursday, January 27th, police learned a person had been stopped in the 1700 block of Cox Lane by an unmarked black Dodge Charger. It had dark-colored rims, a light bar with strobe lights in the rearview mirror, and temporary registration tags, according to the release. The Charger's driver met with the person, but left abruptly when questioned by the complainant regarding his identity and the agency he was with, the record stated. Officers confirmed this man was not affiliated with area law enforcement agencies. The man was described as black, around 20 to 30 years old, 6.5 feet tall, with medium athletic build, and a possible tattoo on his right hand, according to the release. If people have had similar contact with this man or have information, contact the police at 325-657-4315. Domestic disturbance in San Angelo leads to gunshot and man's arrest. By Elena Edgen, published January 27th. A man has been arrested after an argument escalated into gunfire in San Angelo on Thursday morning, according to a police news release. About 7:53 a.m. Thursday, police arrived at a convenience store in the 1600 block of Howard Street. They learned a man, later identified as Curtis Moore, had threatened a person with a gun and fired the gun at a neighboring house, according to the release. Officers learned that this incident had stemmed from an earlier domestic disturbance regarding Curtis Moore and another family member, where officers were unable to make contact with Curtis, the release stated. Police went to a residence in the 1200 block of Howard Street and found it had been hit by a bullet. Officers, believing a gun had been fired, set up a perimeter around the residence and attempted to call the man, records state. They spoke with him and convinced him to surrender peacefully after a brief period of time, according to the release. Curtis Marcello Lee Moore, 45, was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon against a family member. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center with no bond, listed as of 2:45 p.m. Thursday, according to online jail records. Online entries now open for San Angelo Rodeo's Mutton Bustin' Qualifier event. By Rosanna Frere, published February 1st. The rodeo favorite of putting children on sheep to see if they can hold on for 8 seconds is once again upon us. The Sonora Bank Mutton Bustin' at the San Angelo Rodeo is now open for qualifier entries for the event. The San Angelo Rodeo will hold a qualifier event for Mutton Bustin' participants, according to its website. Entries are open from February 1st through 5 p.m. February 25th. Online sign-up can be found on the rodeo's website and is $25 per contestant. The website is sanangelorodeo.com. The qualifier event will be held Saturday, March 5th from 9 a.m. to noon at First Community Credit Union Spur Arena. Late entries will be accepted on site for $50 cash. There will be 180 slots for the qualifier. A to-be-determined number of participants from each window will be selected to advance to a rodeo performance. Qualifier rules. 1. Contestants must weigh 50 pounds or less at the time of the qualifier to participate. Contestants will be weighed at the qualifier, no exceptions. 2. All contestants must have a parent or guardian present. 3. Contestants must fill out waiver of liability prior to participation. 4. All contestants must wear approved safety gear, helmet, and vest. Equipment will be provided by SASSRA. 5. Contestants will ride as positioned on the animal by Mutton Bustin' Committee, forward-facing with no ropes or other assistive devices. 6. Rides will be timed. Clock starts when the sheep exits the chute. Clock stops when any part of the contestant's body touches the ground. 7. Re-rides will be awarded if a rider is fouled at the chute or a sheep fails to stay on its feet for at least a minimum of 15 feet. 8. Judgment of Mutton Bustin' Committee is final. While there is no age limit, we recommend participants be a minimum of 4 years old, the website states. Rodeo performances with Mutton Bustin'. Friday, April 1st, 7:30 p.m. Saturday, April 2nd, 1 p.m. and 7 p.m. Sunday, April 3rd, 2 p.m. Thursday, April 7th, 7:30 p.m. Friday, April 8th, 7:30 p.m. Saturday, April 9th, 1 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. Sunday, April 10th, 2 p.m. Extreme Bulls. Wednesday, April 13th, 7:30 p.m. and Thursday, April 14th at 7:30 p.m. And now here is the column from Allison Watkins. Timing is everything when applying pre-emergent to your lawn. Published January 31st. The weather just seems to get more and more unpredictable. From the extreme winter storm a year ago to the warm December we just had, unusual weather can make gardening even more challenging than it already is in West Texas. But one of the common late winter lawn care tasks, application of pre-emergent herbicide, is based on a measurable factor: soil temperature. If you would like to prevent spring weeds in the lawn, purchase pre-emergent and get it ready to go for when conditions are right, usually around mid-February to early March. Pre-emergent is recommended for lawns twice a year. In the late winter, apply when soil temperatures are about 55 degrees for several days in a row. In the fall, wait until soil temperature decreases to about 70 degrees. Soil temperature can be measured with the soil thermometer or even a simple kitchen meat thermometer. There are also soil temperature maps available online that show the current temperature, as well as a 5-day average. Visit https://tomgreen.agrilife.org/horticulture and click on pre-emergent herbicides for the home lawn to see a publication with more details and a list of products. Some are better for grassy weeds, but there are options for broadleaf as well. Benefin, Balin, Crabgrass Control, Gallery, and Halts or Pre-M are some that are generally widely available in local horticultural supply stores and garden centers, and there are many other brand names and products to choose from as well. Pre-emergent herbicide kills seedlings as they emerge, so timing is very important. It must be applied before the weeds come up, and it's only effective against annual weeds. It will not kill perennial weeds that have an established root system. When used appropriately, pre-emergent can be very effective against otherwise difficult-to-control weeds such as crabgrass, annual bluegrass, and rescue grass. But remember that the first step and the most important factor to having a weed-free lawn is that the turf grass must be dense and healthy. Thin, stressed, or dead lawns open up opportunities for the weeds to grow. So first, focus on proper mowing, irrigation, and fertilization, and then utilize herbicides as needed without relying on them too heavily. Don't apply pre-emergent anywhere that new seeds will be planted in the near future. Different products vary in how long they are effective, but they generally last several months. If you plan to sow grass seed this year, skip the pre-emergent. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.